among the many, many mitzvahs discussed in Parshas Emor, we have the section of the Moadim, it's Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel. And it goes through all of them, it's the Yom Tov Leining. And in fact, not only the Moadim, not only the Yomim Tovim, but also for us in Yonah Diyoma, topical matter, the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. And so let us pick up here in Perek Kaf Gimel, Pasuk Tes Vav. Usvartem lachem mimacharas haShabbos. Count for yourselves from the day after Shabbos. Shabbos, as we know, is the first day of Pesach. That's a vexed issue throughout the generations. Miyom aviyachem es omer tnufa. From the day of the bringing the Omer, that's the 16th of Nisan. Sheva Shabbosos tumimus tiena. 7 complete weeks. And that for us is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. The Pasuk will talk about it again in Parshas Re'eh. Then, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Ad Mimachvas HaShabbos HaShviyos, until the day after the 7th week, Tisbru Chamishim Yo, count 50 days, V'ikravtem Mincha Chadasha LaShem. And then, on day 50, you bring the Mincha Chadasha, that's the Shtei Alechem, that's, of course, a reference to Shavuos. And Mefarshim, of course, look at this Pasuk, the second Pasuk, and anyone looks at the Pasuk will have a simple shaila, arithmetical question. The Pasuk told us in the beginning to count Sheva Shabbosos Tumimos. A Shabbos is 7 days, and 7 weeks are 49 days. And the next Pasuk goes on to say, Tisperu Chamishim Yo. So, if we're Yekish here, we'll insist that actually we don't count 50 days, we count 49 days. Why then does the Pasuk say, Tisperu Chamishim Yo? And as we will see, approaches to this question are quite varied, and we will only be consulting the words of Rishonim. The first place to visit is the commentary of the Rosh in the end of Masech Psachim. That's where he deals with the halachas of Sfiras HaOmer within the context of the end of Psachim. And the Rosh raises this question, Yesh Makshim, there are those who ask, Tisbru Chamishim Yom, it's not 50, it's 49. What are we to say about that? Says Rosh, I don't consider this to be a question that needs to be answered. One merely needs to be familiar with the way of the Torah, and when you are, you will see that this is quite standard. That is to say, whenever we have an amount of whatever it may be, and it's a certain lot of 10 minus 1, it's the derech of the Torah to round it up. And that's okay. If you get down to details, you'll see that it's less one. But it's often that the Torah will present it in the rounded fashion. For simplicity and however else you'll explain it. But that's the derech of the Torah. I'll give an example. Says Rosh, in Parshas Vayigash, as the Torah enumerates all of those of Yaakov's family that are coming down to Mitzrayim, it says, Shivim Nefesh. 70 souls? Now, if you count, and we have, you'll see that it's actually not 70. It's 69. And certain Mefarshim are looking to find out who exactly 70. Maybe it's Yocheved, or maybe it's someone else. But the Rosh says, my approach to this matter is the same. That it's 69, but the Torah calls it Shivim, and the Torah doesn't mean 70 specifically. It means 70, even though it's 70, less one. So if it's 69, that's not a question. There's no need to look for anyone who's missing. Okay, that's quite a simple approach to that question. It nixes the need for the search, in a sense. By the same token, says Rosh, when we come in Parshas Ki Teitzei to the issue of Malchus, if a person violates a lo saaseh with witnesses and he was warned, etc., so there is a penalty, and it's called Malchus. Lashes. How many Malchus does the violator get? The Pasuk says, well, Arba'im Yakenu, 40. That becomes Malchus Arba'im. And yet, as we know, the halacha is, it's actually 39. Says Rosh, here again we have an example of this phenomena, whereby it's 40 less 1, and the Torah calls it Arba'im, but we know that it's 39, however we know. Now actually, if you consult the relevant sugya there in the Gemara in Makos, you'll see that it's the Gemara goes through a drasha to explain how Arba'im really does mean 39. B'mispar Arba'im. Yakenu b'mispar Arba'im. The word b'mispar Arba'im, however you explain that drasha, the number that leads to 40, which is 39, the Gemara has kind of worked it out. But the Rosh is saying at the end of the day, saying 40 is not something that should trouble us, because if 40 is actually 39, that's also okay. And therefore, says Rosh, I say similarly here. You've seen from the first Pasuk that it's Sheva Shabbosos Tamimas. You know that it's 7 times 7, that it's 49. It's not a problem for the Pasuk to go on to say Tisbru Chamishim Yom, because Chamishim here means 50 less 1, and as we, once again, that's the Derech of the Torah. So that's the Rosh's approach, very straightforward. Rashi, it seems, is unprepared to adopt this approach. And in fact, if you look at the two other places that the Rosh quoted, Rashi also gets to work there. He's not prepared to say 70 is 69 and 40 is 39. No. Rashi there in Parshas Vayigash engages. Shivim Nefesh, 70, count them. There's only 69. So Rashi says, you know, Yocheved, she was born, Bein HaChomes, she's number 70. If the Torah says 70, it means 70. Actually, just to mention parenthetically, to say that 70 there is a rounded up number and one doesn't need to look for number 70, the Torah means 69, is not so straightforward. The reason why is because actually the extra number is not only in 70, which is 69. The Pasuk there breaks it down into the different houses, the different wives, the sons of Rachel, the sons of Leah, and Bilhah and Zilpah. Actually, the differential of one exists within the house of Leah, where it says all of those from the house of Leah is 34, I think it said. And actually, if you count, there are only 33. So, in a sense, it's harder to say that the Torah rounded up 33 to 34. It's a much more compelling case to say that there really is an extra one, and then you need to find it. And that's number 70 in the grand scheme of things. But in any case, that's a Parshas Vayigash issue. Rashi, for our purposes, we see, understands that Chamishim Yom means 50. It does not mean 49. The only problem is, so then we're back to square one, because we only count 49, and the Pasuk says 50. And if it means 50, what are we to do? Rashi brings two explanations. We'll only take a look at the first one, and we'll spend a good while recovering from it. Rashi says, Ad mimorchus ha-shabbos ha-shviyis tisperu, count until the day after the seventh week, Tisperu, v'lad bichlal, up to, but excluding, meaning up to that morrow, which is day 50, but excluding, essentially 49 days. V'hein arba'im v'tisha yom. Then the Pasuk says, chamishim yom v'hikravtem mincha chadasha lashem. On day 50, bring the mincha chadasha. What has Rashi done? Essentially what Rashi's done is he has taken the phrase that we were inclined to put together, namely, until the day after the seventh week, Tisbru Chamishim Yom. Tisbru Chamishim Yom. If that phrase goes together, the Pasuk is saying, count 50 days. The problem is, we don't count 50 days. Says Rashi, the first explanation is, and it's, he says it's a drash, he'll go on to explain on Derech HaPshat, but we're staying here within the drash. The Drash actually takes these three words, Tisbru Chamishim Yom, and divides between them. It prizes them apart, as if to say the first of that phrase, Tisbru, is actually connected to the first part of the Pasuk. And Ad Merchus HaShabbos HaShvi is Tisbru. Pause, up to and excluding, which is correct. 49 days excluding that day. then the words Chemishim Yom, they're not a continuation of Tisbu Chemishim Yom. No, you count up to and excluding. Chemishim Yom is the beginning of the next phrase. On day 50, you bring Mincha Chadosh Shel Hashem, which you do. Now, this actually doesn't seem to be that extreme as an approach, but it is, for a simple reason. We know where to pause in the psukim. We know how to apportion the phrases, because we have what's called Tame HaMikra, the trop, the cantillation. Without going into the details of all of them, we keep an eye on one or two of them, which are called Ikim, pauses. They are, for us, the equivalent of a comma or a semicolon. If you look at the words, Pasuk Tet Zayin, following the Tamei HaMikra, it's clearly not what the Drash is suggesting. Ad Mimachras HaShabbos HaShviyas, the two dots on the words HaShviyas are called the Zakef, pause. Tisbru Hamishim Yom, under the word Yom, is in Esnachta, pause. If you have a pause before Tisbru and a pause on Yom, there is no question that Tisbru Chemishim Yom are meant to go together. That's without question the pshat. And if you stay with that, you'll need to explain somehow Tisbru Chemishim Yom al derech hapshat. The question is, so what has the drash done? It seems that the drash has ignored the Tamei HaMikra. We have no idea what drash can do. Maybe it can do that. As if to say, maybe Tamei HaMikra are there for pshat. But drash is a separate enterprise, and maybe it doesn't have any fealty to Tamei HaMikra. And therefore, you're able to divide the words up differently. That's the nature of drash. It doesn't recognize Tamei HaMikra. I believe that is not yet what is happening. I think something else is happening. You see, drash also has rules. And a very interesting concept of that can exist within drash is the following. We know that drash is not pshat, and it's not meant to be, and the two live side by side, and one learns from both of them. The drash is not pshat. However, as much as drash isn't pshat, but it has rules, and one of the rules is that it will pick up on something that is pshat, it's just not pshat here. In other words, sometimes within context and syntax and so on and so forth, one can see that the certain pshat concept is not operable here. Even though in principle it is a pshat concept, the drash will pick up on it. The drash will revive it. The drash will activate it and explain based on it. So the drash actually is recognizing pshat. It's just not pshat here. If that sounds slightly enigmatic, let me explain exactly what I mean. We mentioned that we recognize two pauses, two tamim that pause. They are the zokef, for sure, and the esnachta, also. Okay. Now there is a third mafsik, but it's much milder. And it's very prone to be pushed to the side if there are larger mafsikin. And that is called the tipcha. The tipcha, conveniently for us, is actually shaped like a comma, although I don't know if that has an intrinsic meaning. But if you follow Baalei Koreh, who are very medactic, they'll pause slightly before the tipcha. And it can make a major difference. As we've mentioned in the past, anyone who does malacha on Shabbos will be killed. Where do you put the comma? It can make a great deal of difference. Under the word Shabbos is a tipcha. It's important to pause there, because then the pasuk is saying, whoever does malacha on Shabbos, pause, will be killed. The alternative would be to say, whoever does malacha, Yom HaShabbos, most you must, will be killed on Shabbos. That means it's a capital offense ever to do malacha. The penalty will be carried out on Shabbos, which is rather untrue. So the translation of exactly where to put the markers is decisive, and there it's a tipcha that carries the day. The thing is that tipcha, there is a hierarchy when it comes to pauses. You can't pause the whole time, you'll never get anywhere. which means that you normally follow the stronger pause in the pasuk, and therefore the tipcha gets pushed to the side. You only really, really pause in the tipcha when there's nothing else stronger in the way. And then the tipcha can work wonders. We know, for example, the pausal form can change a segel, can change the pronunciation, it can change a segel into a kamatz. Depending on who you ask, eretz becomes aretz, that's for sure, at the end. Mashivaruchu morid hageshem or goshem. That depends whether you consider it to be the end of the phrase. But if it's the end of the phrase, geshem becomes goshem. The pasuk states with regards to Pesach Sheni and Parshas Balosecha, it's a short pasuk. V'yasu b'nei Yisrael es ha-posach b'moado. We read on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Es ha-posach b'moado. Why is it read as posach? There's a tipcha under the word Pesach, changes it to posach. Tipcha never changes the pronunciation, but the pasuk is so short, there is no room for any of the stronger pauses. So for once, the tipcha is the strongest pause in the pasuk, and therefore it holds sway and changes the pronunciation. So these are nuances for the medaptikim. But the point is, should we ask the question, can a tipcha give you a pause, give you room to pause? The answer is, in principle, yes, but practically not that often. Because if there's so many stronger pauses. But because in principle, yes, then even if it's not true, al-derech ha-pshat, not viable al-derech ha-pshat within context, that the drash will take the form of picking up on it and giving credence to it, giving sway to it. That is exactly what has happened in our pasuk. Once again, if we take a look, our problem was, I mean, Rashi's issue was, everyone's question is, Tisperu Chamishim Yom can't be because you don't count 50 days. So Rashi says, so instead of reading it as a run, Tisperu Chamishim Yom, separate them. Pause after Tisperu, which aligns it, attaches it to the first part, and then Chamishim Yom is the beginning of the next phrase. If you can do that, well and good. Our problem was, there's so many pauses before and after, it doesn't sound like you can pause in the middle. But if you look at the word tisperu, underneath the word tisperu is a tipcha. And therefore, the full measure, really, the correct presentation of what the drash is doing, is not that it's ignoring the pauses of Tamei HaMikra. It's not ignoring the signals. It's actually paying attention to a signal that's ignored al derech ha-pshat. But the drash comes and pays attention to it. And that's why you pause after Tisperu. Everything that I have just said, I believe, is contained within one line of Rabbeinu Bachya. In this week's Parsha, because he quotes the drash and says, yes, and the tipcha seems to bear that out. Now, those are Rabbeinu Bachya's words. He seems to have left a little bit unsaid, because as we know, though many stronger pauses, but I believe what he left unsaid is what we said. In the end, we are paying attention to the tipcha. That's the measure of the drash, to bring it back, to activate it, even though al-derech ha-pshat, it would be overruled, so to speak, by the other pauses. I would like to bring just one other example of this phenomena. There's actually many examples in my files, but just one of the perhaps simpler ones, and it's nogea to us. One of the moedim discussed in this week's Parshas Yom Kippur, they're all discussed. Now, as we know, at the end of Yom Kippur, we have a very interesting halacha. The end of Maseches Yuma, these are the final words, Mishnah Perek Ches, Es Zu Darsh Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah darshened the following pasuk. As we know, the central pasuk of Yom Kippur, Ki vayom hazeh, yichaper lechem, letaher eschem, mikol chatoseichem, lefnei Hashem titaru. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Mikol chatoseichem lefnei Hashem titaru. What's the lesson here? What's the teaching here? It teaches us about Yom Kippur. Aveiro shebin odom lamakom, Yom Kippur mechaper. A sin between man and Hashem, Yom Kippur will be mechaper without any holdups. But aveiro shebin odom lachaveiro, but a sin between man and man, ein Yom Kippur mechaper, ad sheyiratze es chaveiro. Yom Kippur will not give kapara until he makes the peace, until he appeases his friend that he sinned against. That's a well-known halacha. What's it got to do with the pasuk? How does he darshan it from the pasuk? But once again, says the Marsha, the pasuk says, Ki vayom hazeh yichaper aleichem letaher eschem, the day will be mechaper, Mikol chatoseichem lifnei Hashem titaru. Where do you pause? If you pause after the words lifnei Hashem, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's drasha. Because really what he's saying is, if you read the pasuk that way, v'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem l'tayareschem mikol chatoseichem lifnei Hashem. The pasuk will give you kapara for all chatoim lifnei Hashem. Implying, that's only if it's between you and Hashem. But from that we infer that if it's Ben Adam Lamak, if there's more, someone else in the mix, so then Yom HaKippurim will not automatically be Mechaper. That's how we got it from the Pasuk. Very interesting. Except the problem is, how can he pause there? How can he run those words together? Mikol Chatoseichem Lefnei Hashem. On the words Mikol Chatoseichem, there's a Zokif, that's a pause. Lefnei Hashem Titaru is its own phrase. It's not a continuation of the original phrase, as Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah would darshan it. But he does. What has he done? He's done exactly the same thing. Because under the word Hashem is a tipcha. Es zu dorash Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. He engages in drash here. The tipcha does pause. On a pshat level, not here, but on a drash level, yes. And it changes the way we read the pasuk now. Because all of a sudden, you don't stop on the word chatoseichem, you stop on the words lefnei Hashem, and it's a run. Mikol chatoseichem lefnei Hashem, and that gives you Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah's message. Ve'in adam la'mokom, you'll get kapara, not ben adam la'chaveira. So that's another example of this phenomenon. And what's interesting is, this will lead us into the final words of the Mishnah. The famous, Omar Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael. These words will be sung a lot over Lag BaOmer. Ashreichem Yisrael, lifnei mi atem mitarim. Happy are you, Israel. Before whom do you purify yourselves? Umi mitar eschem, avichem shebashamayim. Hashem purifies you. You purify yourselves before him, and he purifies you. Says Marsha, what's this got to do with what we were just talking about? How is this relevant to our previous discussion? We're talking about, you know, different types of sins. You have to appease him, yes or no. And then Rabbi Akiva comes in. Happy are you, Israel, before whom do you purify yourself? Says Marshar, Rabbi Akiva is actually getting this from the very same pasuk that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah got his teaching. Because what Rabbi Akiva is saying is, Lifnei Hashem Titaru. Lifnei Hashem Titaru. You're purifying yourself before Hashem. Ashreichem Yisrael. Lifnei mi atem mitarim. Umi mitar eschem. As it goes on to say. But the point is, Rabbi Akiva, he's not just giving another lesson from this pasuk. He's actually registering his dissent with Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah on this very point. You, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, take the words Lifnei Hashem Titaru and split them up. You attach the words Lifnei Hashem to the earlier part, Mikol Chatoseichem Lifnei Hashem. Pause. It's about a type of Avera. Rabbi Akiva comes in to argue with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah how to read the pasuk. Don't split them up like that, but rather keep the words Lifnei Hashem Titaru, or at least don't forget to do that, because that gives you this other message. They really should be together. Lifnei mi atem mitarim. So actually, those final two discussions about Yom Kippur represent two alternative ways of how to break up that pasuk, and it all comes down to laying emphasis on this, the often forgotten tipcha. What's fascinating is, just as a PS on this question, we, if one can say, actually seem to follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. In what respect? Well, not only do we pass on the halacha based on his teaching that one needs to make the peace ben adam l'chaveiro, but also how we read the pasuk. Interesting to notice. On Yom Kippur, during the Avodah, as we go through the whole of the Seder Avodah Yom Kippurim, so we reach a point when the Kohen Gadol says his vidui. It's a very intense time. And the Chazan says the pasuk, and that's when we do Korim. That's when we do Korim. Kivayom hazeh, yichaper aleichem, letaher eschem, mikol chatoseichem, lefnei Hashem. What comes next? Well, no, not in the Machzor. I'm sorry if it was a trick question, but what comes next? Va'koanim, v'ha'am, k'shayu ha'ishu'a'undim ba'azora, k'shayu'a'shem da'ashem ha'godol, yotzei, mefersh, ha'yukur mishtachavim, v'omer baroshen kavod machusa le'olam vo'ed. Whatever happened to Titaru? We seem to have forgotten all about it. Except we don't forget, because the Chazan continues, And he would say to them, Titaru. So within the Machzor, actually, we take the words Lifnei Hashem and we do attach it to the beginning of the Pasuk. And we stop, and there's Korim, and then we carry on with one word. Titaru. Essentially, we've broken up that phrase, which is exactly what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said to do. So it's very interesting to note that actually in the Seder HaTfilah, we read the Pasuk the way Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Lifnei Hashem is the beginning of the Pasuk. Titaru is its own phrase now. That's the power of the Tipcha there. Okay. So this is Rashi's approach to Tisperu Chamishim Yom. The words themselves need so much attention. I was not aware of more than two explanations amongst Rishonim to this until this afternoon when I opened up the writings of or based on the Shiurim of Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, and he says something which is simply astounding. The Rambam. Of course, Rav Soloveitchik, Rambam. So the Rambam in Hilchos Tmidim Musafim, so he talks about Sefirat HaOmer, and he goes through all the halachas. And then he says in Perek Ches, these are his words. B'yom chamishim misfiras ha'omer. On the 50th day, misfiras ha'omer, hu chag ha'shavuos. That's it. Now, again, his words are, B'yom chamishim misfiras ha'omer, hu chag ha'shavuos. Now, Rav Soloveitchik asks a very simple question. We never talk about Shavuos like that. It sounds like Shavuos is the 50th day of the Omer. Miyom Chamishim Misfiras HaOmer. Biyom Chamishim Misfiras HaOmer, on the 50th day of the Sefiras HaOmer. We always understood that the Sefiras HaOmer finished yesterday, and it brought you to this point, and today is now the day after you finish counting the Omer. There is no 50th day of the Sefiras HaOmer. It's only 49 days long. But the Rambam refers to Shavuos as Yom Chamishim Misviras HaOmer. Now, there's maybe different ways to intonate what the Rambam is saying, but Rav Soloveitchik understands that the Rambam is telling us that Shavuos is the 50th day of the Omer. The Omer is 50 days long. The Omer is a process. It begins on the second day of Pesach, and it ends on Shavuos. Now, should you say, but I mean, no one ever says Hayom Chamishim Yom LaOmer. I mean, no one's ever said that. It's true. But Tisperu, for the first 49 days, because they're not Yom Tov, they're marked by being counted. Shavuos is marked by being a Yom Tov. Sfira is to know where you are. What is today? So the first 49 of the 50 days are noted by being counted in that way, in numbers. Shavuos is counted by being made a Yom Tov. That's hard to ignore it. It's day 50. Which is a simply completely different way of looking at the whole thing. But what's fascinating is, as Rav Soloveitchik, aside from all the implications of what it means to refer to Shavuos as the 50th day of the Omer, one thing is for sure, the Pasuk couldn't be clearer. The Pasuk says, Tisperu Chamishim Yo, and yes, we count 50 days. The source of all of our problems a few moments ago is actually the source of what the Rambam is saying. Tisperu Chamishim Yo really does mean to count, at least to take into account the first 49 by counting, and the 50 by making it into a Yom Tov. So that's altogether quite a different approach to these words, Tisperu Chamishim Yo. So, for those of you who say the L'Shem Yichud before Sefiras HaOmer, so these psukim are mentioned there, plenty to think about. And if you don't say L'Shem Yichud, so you have even more time to think about it. That's the fascinating words of the Rishonim with regards to this phrase, Tisperu Chamishim Yom. Now, I'd like to continue our discussions of Sefiras HaOmer to move from the Parshanut to a practical matter with regards to the Sefira. As we know, we count the Omer for 49 days. Okay. What if a person missed a day? Okay, here it begins. Well, there is one of the great, I wouldn't say Rishonim, Geonim. He's from the time before the Rishonim. He is the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos. And he is quoted by Tosfos in Menachos and Daf Samach Vav, and I believe his words are well known, or at least the effect of his words are well known. Says Tosfos, Posak b'halachas gedolos. The halachas gedolos ruled, she'im hifsig yom echad v'lo safar, if a person missed a day and didn't count, shuv eino sofer. That's it. He's out of the count. As far as the Bahag is concerned, he doesn't count at all beyond that point. Why? Why not? Says Bahag, Mishum debayet mimos, because we need tmimos. The pasuk says sheva shepasus tmimos. Tmimos means complete. Complete means you can't miss a day. And therefore, if you miss a day, it's no longer tmimos, and it no longer has a possibility of tmimos, and therefore there's no count anymore. That's the rather extreme position of the Bahag. Miss a day, and you're out. Now, Tosfos has something to say about this. The final line of Tosfos, their position, v'tema gedolahu. This is a great wonder. V'lo yitochein, and it is impossible. Those are Tosfos' words about the Bahag. It can't be. It can't be that if you miss a day, you're out of the count. Now, the question is, well, why not? I mean, the Bahag told you exactly why he said this, because of tmimus. Tmimus means it's all or nothing. It's got to be complete. Missed a day, it's not complete. So why did Tosfos say that this cannot be? So Meforshim explained two objections of slightly different nature. Firstly, the Gemara itself has something to say about the word tmimus. The Bahag's position comes from tmimus, got to be complete. The Gemara uses or explains the word tmimus in a completely different way. As we know, we count the Omer at night. It's very important to count the Omer at night, not the next day. If it's the next day, you don't count with the bracha anymore. Right? You only count with the bracha at night. According to some, you don't count at all during the day. I mean, we do, but without a bracha. From where does this come? That one needs to count at night. Says the Gemara, tmimus. Tmimus means complete. Complete means you can't have such a significant part of the day go by, otherwise known as the night, and only then count, because that's not called tmimus. You haven't counted the whole thing. You've got to count from the outset of each day. Which means that the Gemara has already accounted for the word tmimus. It's about when in each day you count. So it seems to be not available for the Bahag to then say that tmimus means another thing or something else, that you have to count all of the days. You can't miss a day. Another point, though, which is raised by Rishonim, is it seems, according to the Bahag, counting the Omer is one mitzvah that lasts for 49 days. I mean, if each day is critical, it sounds like it's all one mitzvah. But if it's all one mitzvah, then why is it that we make a bracha every night? I mean, you don't make a bracha on a fraction of a mitzvah. You don't make a bracha before performing another part of the same mitzvah. If you make another bracha, it's because it's a separate mitzvah. And we do, and I don't think anyone disputes that. And that itself would seem to indicate that every night is its own mitzvah. Just count whatever night you are in the Omer. You missed yesterday, it's unfortunate, but count tonight. It's a new mitzvah. So this is the background to the opposition, so to speak, to the Bahag. Okay, so those are the opinions. Now what do we do? What's the halacha? So the halacha is nothing less than testimony to the towering stature of the Bahag. No one else agrees with the Bahag. Everyone else says the days are independent of each other. Every day is a new mitzvah. However, Bahag said they're interdependent. You can't miss a day. And in deference, therefore, to the Bahag, the Shulchan Aruch says, if a person missed a day, he continues to count, but without a bracha. See, that's the mark that the Bahag found. He continues to count, of course, according to almost all authorities, every day is a new mitzvah. Why on earth should he not count? Of course he continues to count. But without a bracha, because the Bahag has spoken, and the Bahag says he doesn't need to be counting anymore, so he counts without a bracha. That's how it stands. However, this is really the background if we're just familiar with some of the other details. If you're not sure if you counted the Omer, all of these scenarios, if you're not sure if you counted the Omer, you will continue to count with a bracha, because as soon as we're one step away from what the Bahag himself is talking about, we just default back to counting every new night with a bracha. So it's only if you definitely missed a day, an entire 24 hours that is, then we take the Bahag into account. You continue counting, but without a bracha. It's unfortunate that some people feel that because of this halacha, they're not aware so much of the background, and therefore they kind of feel that if they're not making a bracha, so they're really not in the mitzvah, and maybe they might neglect to count from that point onwards because they don't really feel that they're still in the count, which is unfortunate. They very much are in the mitzvah, according to almost everyone. Just for the bracha, we give credence to the Bahag. Okay. This leads to a very interesting shaila. The background to the question is, the Gemara tells us, it's in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, if a person performs a mitzvah at a time that he's exempt from the mitzvah, so his act doesn't really count, it doesn't mean anything. Interestingly, the situation is, right, we shouldn't know from such things, if a person is insane, however that's defined by the halacha, he's exempt from mitzvahs, and if he does a mitzvah, it has no validity. If a person drifts in and out of insanity, again, with someone, they're monitoring exactly when he's what, so then during the time of no das, his acts are meaningless. What that means is, if he ate matzah on Pesach, on Seder night, during one of those times, and then he drifts back in, just in time, says the halacha, the good news is he's back, and the further good news is he now has to eat matzah, because anything that he did when he was exempt from mitzvahs, essentially, doesn't count. So, the shaila is, someone else who's exempt from mitzvahs, someone under bar mitzvah. Now, if someone becomes bar mitzvah during the time of the Omer, and statistically, 7 weeks out of the year, it could happen. In the middle of the Omer, he becomes bar mitzvah. At this point, he becomes obligated in mitzvahs. Looking back, the 20 days into the Omer, he becomes bar mitzvah. So the first 20 days, he wasn't yet obligated in mitzvahs. He's exempt from mitzvahs. Which means that from the vantage point of now being bar mitzvah, he's obligated in mitzvahs, those 20 days didn't count. Which means that he's missed 20 days. He's like a grown-up who's missed 20 days. Is that true? And can he now count the last 29 days with a bracha? That's a shaila. Yeah, it's no gear to many people. I have two sons who were born during the Omer. One of them's bar mitzvahed already, so he spoke about tefillin, but there's a bar mitzvah drasha waiting here. Indeed, we should know, the Chidah, in the Rav Azulai, in the Sefer Birka Yosef, paskens, that because of this, from the time of his bar mitzvah, he carries on counting, but without a bracha. I mean, he takes this exactly as we presented it. From his point of view, from a real point of view, he hasn't counted the first 20 days, so he's out of the count. However, there are those who differ. How could they? So let's see. The first question that we need to establish is, certainly for nowadays, Sfiras HaOmer, is it a D'oraisa mitzvah? Is it a D'rabbanan mitzvah? We'll see that's very important. According to almost all Mefarshim Shulchan Aruch, certainly it is a D'rabbanan nowadays. In other words, the actual mitzvah of counting the Omer is connected to the Korban Omer. Miyom Haviyachem es Omer HaTnufa. It's only D'oraisa when you have the Korban Omer at the beginning and the Shtei Lechem at the end. In the absence of that, we do it Zecher LeMikdash. That is the opinion of almost all Poskim. Rambam differs, and Shulchan Aruch actually parts ways with the Rambam. Rambam understands that it's D'oraisa even nowadays, but according to the Shulchan Aruch, and that's how we take on halacha, it's D'rabbanan. Why is that significant? Because that means that nowadays, even an adult, when he counts to Omer, he's fulfilling a mitzvah D'rabbanan. So now go back to the child. A child is not obligated in mitzvahs on a D'oraisa level, but at a certain point he becomes obligated in mitzvahs on a D'rabbanan level, otherwise known as the mitzvah of Chinuch. Chinuch is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Chanuch Lanara Pida. And therefore, there are those who say that actually the premise of the problem doesn't exist. We're saying that his first 20 days when he was younger than Bar Mitzvah didn't count because he was a Katan. They counted on a Durabonon level, and even post-Bar Mitzvah, this Mitzvah is Durabonon. So on a Durabonon level, he's actually fulfilled the Mitzvah. It could be. Some say. Okay. Now, there are details and nuances there, but this is one of the points of argument. Rav Sternbuch, in the Sefer Ma'adim Uzmanim, has two further issues to raise here to support continuing to count with a bracha. Firstly, he raises a fascinating question. We've stated that someone who's exempt from counting the Omer, so his counting doesn't count. Anyone who's exempt from mitzvahs, his mitzvahs don't count. Our example was the Shote, this unfortunate person who's taken leave of his senses. That's clear in the Gemara. Is someone under Bar Mitzvah like that? Are they exactly like a Shote? Are they off halachically? Anything they do is like it never happened? So here's an interesting psak from the Rambam. In Hilchos Korban Pesach, as we know, coming up to Pesach Sheni, and what's Pesach Sheni for? Anyone who wasn't able to bring or partake of the Korban Pesach in Pesach Rishon gets a second chance. Pesach Sheni. Okay. What constitutes not being able to fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach? Out of town, Tomei, held up, whatever it is. Says Rambam, what if he became Bar Mitzvah between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni? But he did actually eat from the Korban Pesach on Pesach Rishon. It's just he wasn't Bar Mitzvah yet. So do we say, oh, well, that didn't count. So now that you're grown up, this is your first Pesach, you've got to bring Pesach Sheni? Says Rambam, no. He doesn't have to bring Pesach Sheni. He's already fulfilled the mitzvah, Korban Pesach. When? When he was 12 years and 11 months and a couple of weeks. Says Or Sameach, what we see from this Rambam is that when it comes to a katan under Bar Mitzvah, he's not obligated to perform a mitzvah. But if he does, it registers. It's happened. He has fulfilled the mitzvah. He's not obligated under Bar Mitzvah to eat from the Korban Pesach. But if he has fulfilled the Korban Pesach, in a month's time, we don't look upon him as someone who never did Korban Pesach. He did. And therefore, says Rav Sternbuch, based on this, what we're saying is the katan is not the same as the shota. The shota is exempt and excused and doesn't register. But a katan does. If we apply that to our situation, when he counted the days of the Omer, and during his final days of you know, being a 12-year-old, it counts. I have your pardon the expression. But the Sfiras HaOmer, the days count. And therefore, from that point of view, even if he's entirely exempt, we don't look upon him as someone who didn't fulfill the mitzvah. Fulfillment he had. That's one point. The second point of Rav Sternbuch, which is fascinating. It's a great chiddush, and as far as I'm aware, Rav Sternbuch is not the first person to say this chiddush. He's the second in terms of what I have seen. He was preceded by Rav Reuven Margolius by a couple of decades, who says exactly this in his sefer Nefesh Chaya, in Siman Taf Pei Tes. And what do they say? Prior to Bar Mitzvah, A child has a mitzvah called chinuch. But once he becomes bar mitzvah, so he's not obligated out of chinuch anymore, because now he's bar mitzvah. Says Rav Reuven Margolius, but what does that mean? In other words, if we just look at it in terms of numbers, it sounds like the mitzvah of chinuch only exists when you're younger than bar mitzvah. But once he's bar mitzvah, so then chinuch is out, and now he's obligated in the world. There's no concept of chinuch post bar mitzvah. Says Reuven Margolius, that's not necessarily true. The definition of the mitzvah of chinuch is not to school yourself in mitzvahs until you become bar mitzvah. It's to school yourself in mitzvahs until you become obligated in those mitzvahs. Now, doesn't that sound like two ways of saying the same thing? Bar mitzvahs, when you become obligated in mitzvahs. Yes. But what would happen if somehow you became bar mitzvah and weren't obligated in a mitzvah? What could that be? Well, maybe it's our very case. If we say that a person's not obligated in Sfiras HaOmer, if you miss the first 20 days, then actually he, in that year that he becomes bar mitzvah, for those last 29 days, he's not obligated in the mitzvah because he's missed the first 20. But if he's not obligated in the mitzvah, then the mitzvah of chinuch is still there. And he has to continue to count with the bracha midin chinuch. Chinuch will reach 2 weeks into his bar mitzvah, as surely as a year earlier he counted the whole omer midin chinuch because he wasn't obligated. So it's almost, as we're saying, his weakness is his strength. If even, as soon as we accept the fact that he no longer has the mitzvah of counting the omer, so then he still has to continue to count as chinuch, as he always needed to do prior to being obligated in the mitzvahs. It's a stunning argument from Rav Margolius and then Rav Moshe Sturmer, and based on this, they paskin that, or at least explain that he should be able to continue to count with the bracha. What's interesting is there could be a converse case. We're talking about someone who's, he missed a day and now what? But then the question is, what if a person hasn't missed a day, but he knows that he will? He knows that 2 weeks into this, into the Omer, he will miss a day. How can he know? Well, let's say, lo aleinu, the scenario is, there's surgery scheduled, it cannot be postponed, and he'll be under anesthetic, and he'll be out of functioning for 24 hours. That's pretty much a given. So he begins counting the Omer on the second day of Pesach, knowing that in 2 or 3 weeks' time, he will miss a day. So do we allow him to count from the outset, knowing that he will not be able to complete the count unless things change? Anything could change, but in terms of what he knows. And that's an interesting shaila. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach rules here that even if he knows, that even if we take that as a certainty, nonetheless he begins to count. You can't compare an obligation to count now, that you will miss a day later on, to what the Bahag was talking about. The Bahag says you've already missed a day. Now what? But already in advance to put yourself out of the count for a day that you will miss, that we don't do. And in fact, his proof, and this will conclude just this halachic part, his proof is the extreme position of the Chida. The Chida said, this bar mitzvah boy, what does he do? He becomes bar mitzvah 20 days into the Omer. So the first 20 days he counts as chinuch, and then he has to stop counting because looking back from bar mitzvah, the first 20 days didn't count. But if he's going to stop counting because the first 20 days didn't count, then why does he count the first 20 days with a bracha? I mean, he knows when his bar mitzvah will be. It's not a surprise. So he knows that essentially he will be out of the mitzvah in 2 weeks' time. It doesn't stop him from counting now. So the Chida himself is the source for this idea that you count, if you have a day to count now, you count. You don't worry about what will be in 2 or 3 weeks' time. So these are some of the highlights from this very interesting shaila, beginning, as we said, with the Bach. So from the Parshanut of Sfiras HaOmer to some of the halachic discussions of Sfiras HaOmer, but what is Sfiras HaOmer? Some thoughts behind the Sfira itself. It's such a deceptively easy mitzvah. It's easy to induce certain unease. We count a day in the Omer, and that's that. The Ksava Kabbalah is especially troubled, really, by the fact that we call it Sfiras HaOmer. Firstly, the very fact that the Korban is called an Omer already says Darshani. Omer is not a mystical term, and it's also not a descriptive term. Or that is to say, it's not a characteristic term. Omer is a measurement. That's all it is. An Omer is a tenth of an Ephah. Which means, if you have a Korban, and you call it after the amount of flour that's in the Korban, it sounds like you don't have anything else to say about it. There's nothing really characteristic about it. All of the other korbanos have characteristic names. How are they prepared, or what are they? It's a chatos, it's a shlamim, it's a... We never say a korban se. That's not a name of a korban. It describes the animal, but it's not a name of a korban. So here, all the other korbanos, of all the things to say, we call it an omer. It's an amount. It seems such a technical, a footnote almost in terms of, it says how much of it there is, but it doesn't say what it is. That's a question on the Pasuk, actually, because the Pasuk will call it the Omer HaTnufa. It only gets exacerbated, really, because we take this formula and make it into a bracha. Hashem Shana Mitzosa Mitzivanu Al Sviras HaOmer, which is even more removed, counting the Omer. It's one thing, why does the Torah call that Korban the Omer? The entire count now becomes called counting the Omer. And every day we will say, tonight is such and such an amount of days, La Omer, or Ba Omer, right? In the Omer. This seemingly technical thing stays with us. It's the motif in the bracha, in the pasuk, in the count, and it seems to be just such a technical thing. And that's why the Ksava Kabbalah says, and it's classic Ksava Kabbalah, because it's the full range, really, of Lashon HaKodesh. Open to him. The word Omer is an amount, but the word Omer also has a meaning. What are these 7 weeks? What are these 49 days? They're days that link Pesach to Shavuos. They're days that give realization to what Pesach is about. Pesach is free from Mitzrayim and everything that that represents. And now the question is, free to do what? The day after the Seder, we start a count. And that count is leading up to Shavuos. It's leading up to receiving the Torah. Receiving the Torah, essentially, is trading in, is upgrading, we could say, one type of service, which was not good for us, for another type of service, which is the ultimate good for us. The word Omer actually means to serve. The pasuk says in Parshas Ki Teitze, with regards to the Eishes Yifas Toar, that whole parsha there, if he wants, he can marry her. If he doesn't want to marry her, this woman that he took in war, so he has to let her go. So let her go back. You can't just kind of keep her on as a maid or something. Lotis amer ba, with an ayin. Lotis amer. It's a verb. Don't just have her enter into your service as a house help. If you want to marry her, fine. If not, let her go. Lotis amer b'his amer bo umecharo. Says lis amer means to serve. And that is now a new meaning of the Korban HaOmer. The Korban HaOmer is the Korban of preparing for service. And this counting of the Omer is counting up to enlisting in that service. Tonight is such and such a days of the Omer, of the enlisting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's service, of his Amer. It's a whole new vista. It's not just an amount. It's a way of life. And with that in mind, says the Ksava Kabbalah, Usfartem lachem. Everything in the pasuk now looks different. Usfartem, to count. What does it mean to count? There are two ways of counting in the Torah. That is to say, there's counting to know a number, but sphira doesn't just mean a tally of units. Sphira means supervision. The pasuk says in Eov says to Hashem, Va'ata es tsa'adi tispor. You count my steps. The Hashem is not acting there as a pedometer, counting Eov's steps. Tsa'adi tishmor means you count in the sense that you supervise them. You take accounting for them and you look after them. Tsa'adi tishmor. So usfartem lachem. Sfiras ha'omer is not counting the number of days merely. It takes the form of counting. But sfiras ha'omer is supervise these days. Look after them. Look after what's happening in them. They are preparatory days. And in fact, the word that kind of goes unnoticed here is usfartem lachem. Well, it's lachem. It can get glossed over. Count for yourselves, and we don't think about it. But lachem has a meaning. Lachem means for you, as in lech lecha, lech lecha, lehana asecha, letov asecha. Go for your benefit. Improve, develop, usfartem, supervise these days, lachem, develop in them, benefit from them, grow in them. Because you're developing the Omer, the formatting yourselves for receiving the Torah on Shavuos. So these are his comments with regards to Sfiras HaOmer. And I think when we come back to what Rav Soloveitchik said about the Rambam's understanding of Tisbuch HaMishim Yom, we certainly see how very naturally Shavuos is the 50th day of the Omer. Because the, if the Omer as receiving the Torah, so day 50 when we receive the Torah is the culmination of the count. First 49 days of preparation of Omer, and the 50th day is the day of Omer itself. And I believe it's an important perspective on these days of the Omer. And this is what's behind Minag Yisrael in Chutz Laretz, certainly for those who remember, Shabbos afternoon, and during the weeks of the Omer, Pirkei Avos, I'm not exactly sure where that went here, but Pirkei Avos, that's where it came from. It's about preparation, it's about... And I think there's a very profound point here, because the Omer is referred to in the Torah as the Omer HaTnufa, in Pasuk Ketesvav, Omer HaTnufa. Now, if Omer is a measurement, which is a technical thing, and Tnufa is waving, which is also a technical thing, it's one of the things that happens with the Korban. So it's technical terms, they are okay side by side. But it's characteristic terms, they're almost antithetical to each other. Because Omer, if Omer is Hishtabdut, if Omer is about subjugation and enlisting oneself in service, Tnufa is almost the opposite of that. Because when one is Omer, one lowers oneself. And Tnufa is when something is raised aloft and waved. Omer doesn't normally do that. That's true. There's only one type of Omer that does that, and that's the Omer towards receiving the Torah. And this is one of the most important things to be mindful of, especially during these days, events of recent weeks, from Pesach to Shavuos and everything else that's in between. It is the question. What do we do with our freedom that we got on Pesach? We're looking... What are we looking for? Abdus Mitzrayim, that wasn't our final calling. But the full realization and the full meaning of what it means to be free of Mitzrayim is free now to enlist in Hashem's divine program for living. That's his Amer, but it's Omer HaTnufa. In other words, we enlist in that and we take that on and embrace it, not with the goal of pushing ourselves further down, but with the goal of raising ourselves as high as we can be. And that's the key point, because it comes back to the question of the Rosha. The Rosha can't, on the Seder night, I mean, the poor thing, he's confused. He can't see how freedom and mitzvahs go together. And it's a sad state to be in, because in the end he gets left behind. He has his own waving around, but he's not part of the ultimate way of being, which is for the Jewish people, and that's the ultimate tragedy. So these are thoughts to bear in mind as we count the Omer. It's a few moments really every night, but this new insight into Sfiras HaOmer. What is Sfira, and what is Omer, and what are we preparing ourselves for? The more orientation we have, the more preparation we have, the more we can hope to encounter on the 50th day of the Omer, Chag HaShavuos, which will come in a few weeks' time. We'll leave it over there for this evening.